process to the mother-in-law of the secretary of the committee, Mr. Masonelli, who lost this morning his mother-in-law. May I also take this opportunity to convey on behalf of Mokota's family the loss of a councillor in Mokakaluka municipality to pass on Saturday. Also with one official from the same municipality, Felix Sobrano, will also be joining in terms of the preparations of the funeral of the family of our family. We then asked the house just to rise up and observe a moment of silence for the minister. Thank you very much. And I also place on record that even in Gate Nkosana Mfuko lost his cousin also. I think he will automatically be included in the moment of silence. It was in my mind. My apologies for that. He's not here with us today for the simple reason that he's attending that particular funeral arrangement. Can I then take the opportunity to ask for adoption of the agenda that is before us and we can proceed? Can you move up? Allah Hussindi.
Yes, sir. This is an amendment to the question.
Can you second that adoption of the agenda, please? Honorable Khan, thank you very much. Can you then go to item number 2? Introductions of my members. May I take this opportunity to introduce myself? My name is Chad Mohamed, the chairperson of the Select Committee of Court. Maybe we should start on my right hand side with my learned friend, Mr. Honorable.
Thank you, Jacques Julius, a member of the committee from Gauteng Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jordan Kalakis. I represent the Free State.
Good morning, Morgan Chetty. Take care.
Good morning, Morsu Sanga, Obalang.
Good morning. My name is Jumi Sanga Kimbi. I'm with MK.
Good morning. Kina Khadraku Manopuna. Sojoko Kapapukuna.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Louis Zimande, representing KwaZulu-Natal on the committee.
Tshwela Mlasula, leina la ka ke nna sa morago ga Tshwela. Ke moleloko wa komiti, ke tswa ke le lephoko, ke a leboga.
Okay, can I then take this opportunity to ask DG just to introduce the delegation that is accompanying him?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Vusi Makazela, Director General of the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Charles Maina. Director General of Personal Affairs.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. I'm Lan Sam Shimin. I'm Senior Manager for Office and
good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Maklanga Pani. I'm traditional artist.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Dorothy Snyman from DCOC.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mtoto Sigiti from Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mohani Mamabitilala from Cooperative Governance.
A very good morning, honorable members. Lebohan Tikali, Ministry.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Judy Gosnell from the Office of the Director General, Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Shanaz Majid. I'm one of the Deputy Director Generals in the branch looking after local government municipal systems.
Thank you very much, that is the delegation for that. Others, or you can introduce yourself.
Good morning, Honorable Mike. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Rutama Sada from the Office of the Head of NISA.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Sonja Jimarakela from the Department of Corporate Government.
Honorable Members, my name is Susan Mabo from the Ministry of the Office of the Deputy of the Department.
Okay, quickly, can I ask officials from the Select Committee just to introduce themselves?
Good morning, my name is Moss Malere, I am the Commissioner.
My name is Lana, I am the Commissioner.
Good morning, my name is Isang Mushimi, I am the Committee Section.
That's right.
Good morning, everybody, my name is Jennifer Cove, I'm a researcher to the Committee, so I just want to know you guys.
Good morning, my name is Stephanie Matthews, I'm also the Committee Section.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think we are done with the introduction. Honourable members and officials present here, in terms of our point, we are going to afford the department to do a presentation in case you fill up any clarification questions. You must note it down up until the presentation has been done. Then we can direct with the presentation. I think in terms of the agenda, we are having presentation on the briefing by the Department of Culture on their own 2014-2015 budget vote and the APT. Not in waste of time, allowing them to give the DG, whoever that is assigned to do the presentation on behalf of the department, to do so. Then immediately after that, we afford any opportunity to make any additions in case there might be other issues outstanding. But I wish to make it upfront, because it's your own presentation. We would appreciate if you don't read, but instead you reflect on the you speak to your slides in simpler terms. Without any waste of time, allow me then to give whoever that is assigned to the presentation to do so on behalf of the department.
Thank you very much indeed.
I hope all of us have copies of the presentation. You either use the slides or you go through them, the presentation is done.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Effectively, three parts to this presentation, and the first part will be technically four parts. We have an introduction section of the presentation, which is ordinarily given by the Minister. In his absence, I will pretend to be him. So I'll present that part as well, and then I will present the cooperative governance section of the presentation. And that will be followed by the presentation by DG Naida from the Business Affairs, and then our finance people will then deal with the last part relating to the news. On slide number two, what we indicate is effectively the COPTA comprised of two departments, being Corporate Governance and Business Affairs. And then we set out the various chapters of Constitution that underpin our mandate. We committed to include Chapter 10 of our Constitution on Public Administration on that slide. Public Administration component being what focuses on the basic values and principles governing public administration. On slide number three, we set out our system of cooperative governance as contained in Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which makes reference to the fact that our Constitution constitutes government as a national, provincial, and local sphere. This point is very important because many municipalities, may I say also politicians at both national and provincial level, tend to make the assumption that municipalities are independent, and in fact they are not. But the Constitution sets out in Section 40 is that the spheres are distinctive, they are interrelated and interdependent. So there is no autonomy or independence of any of the spheres of our government system. And on slide number four, we we talk about the system of corporate governance, and we will also talk about chapter 7, which emphasizes the world war system of local governance, which effectively says that our municipalities will cover the whole of the territory of the Republic. And we also make reference to section 1-4, which talks about the obligation of both national and provincial governments to provide support to local governments to enable to fulfill its constitutional mandates. And on slide number 5, we talk about local governments as being that sphere of government at the core base of delivery. It is true what local government does, that helps government fulfill its obligations to the citizens in respect of Israel's provisions of the Bill of Rights. We talk about human dignity, equality, and freedom. Of course, providing services to our people to enhance their right to human dignity and providing them with an environment that is not harmful to their health and well-being, and to access water and adequate services. Name I see. On slide number 6, went back to chapter 3 of our constitution. We talk about the Intergovernmental Relations Act, which provides a framework for national, provincial, and local governments to work together in a coordinated way. And on slide number 7, the focus is on the interface between provincial and national governments in providing support to municipalities. And actually, on this slide, we also covered various levers that are available to national governments in particular to making sure that there is a standardization of in respect of the provincial services, both at provincial and local governments. Slide number 8 is essentially a continuation of that which talked about the legislative and executive authority of national government, making sure that they're set out in schedules 4 and 5, those that fall within the competence of provinces, because those that fall within the exclusive competence of municipalities. So slide number 9 is essentially a summary of the mandate. We talked that with the various chapters, and I've said we would include chapter 10, and we summarize what each chapter really has to say. Chapter 3 about cooperative governance, chapter 5 talking about the intervention in provincial and in the provincial administration. This will also entail section 100 of the Constitution. Chapter 6 was dealt with provincial intervention in local government. Chapter 7 that deals with the cooperative governance in that report. And chapter 9 also talks about those institutions that promote democracy in our country. Chapter 10 that deals with public administration. And chapter 12 that deals with the recognition of institutions status and the role of traditional leadership. Now from slide number 12, we focus specifically on the strategic plan of the Department of Cooperative Governance. And what we set out is that the overall strategy of the Department of Cooperative Governance is predicated on our best basics program, and that our strategic plan that will cover the period after 2019 will be predicated on the understanding of that and its amplification of the National Development Plan, which has been translated into the medium term strategic framework 2014-2019. And in a sense, our new strategic plan for 2015-2019 draws inspiration from those documents of self suggestion. Our vision is set out on slide number 13, which talks about a functional and developmental local government system that delivers on a constitutional and legislative mandate within a system of government. And of course, we conclude by making the point that the National Development Plan, in the context of the vision that was set up, talks about building a capable developmental center to make sure that we are able to achieve what we envision in Bukhara-Jaran Papar. On slide number 14, we set out the mission statement, which is predicated on the five pillars of our strategic program, which basically talks about putting people first and their concerns. Number two, supporting the delivery of municipal services to the right quality of standards. Point number three, promoting good governance, transparency and accountability. The fourth pillar being ensuring sound financial management and accounting. And the fifth pillar being building civil resilience and administrative capacity. On the slide number 15, we talk about the alignment of the values of the Department of Cooperative Governance to the broader spirit of Australia that governs the public administration as a whole. These, I take, are our common cause to all members of the committee. They have been established several years ago. I needn't repeat them. All we're saying is that these are part and parcel of the values that guide our work. Slide number 16 to 19 set up various pieces of legislation that the Department of Corporate Governance is responsible for. These range from the Municipal Property Rights Act, the Local Government Municipal Finance Management Act, Disaster Management, the Systems Act, the Structures Act, the Intergovernmental Relations Act, the Municipal Administration Act, the Fire Brigade Services Act, the Remuneration of Public Bearers, must be office bearers, and the Local Government Cross-Boundary Municipal Act. These various pieces of legislation are briefly summarized as to exactly what the objectives are on the right hand side of course. I think they are pretty straightforward, and I take it that they are common cause. On slide number 20, Chairperson, this is where we talk about our planned policy initiatives for the period that covers 2014 to 2019. And we reiterate on that slide the adoption of factor basics program, which was originally tabled by our minister in Parliament last year. And it repeats the five pillars that are already set out in the earlier slides. And on page number 21, by the slide number 21, we talk about how we have decided to operationalize Cluster Basics. Cluster Basics being an approach that basically says that in order to get things right in our municipalities, we need to make sure that basic things are done right. And in a sense, our Cluster Basics approach builds on the previous intervention that has been made. Project Consolidate, the Enzerman, the local government turnaround strategy. That this instance sits at present at the apex of all those interventions we've made over time. And having adopted that approach, we've come to understand that the Department of Cooperative Governance and indeed the entirety of COCSA can be structured in the old way. It needs to be structured differently in order to deliver on its mandate. And as you will see on slide number 22, we've proposed a new organizational structure which has now been submitted to the Department of Public Service and Administration, and we will be engaging with them soonest to seek agreement with them on the establishment of this structure. On the face of it, it doesn't have significant financial implications because we will be utilizing the current resources that we've got. It will be in all instances that additional resources may be required, and in that regard, we will engage with the National Treasury to request them to make available to us the necessary resources to undertake our work. As you will see, we are proposing to have a branch that will focus on the command center, which would essentially coordinate and drive back basis activities across the department and across government as a whole in order to create real change on the ground. There will be a new branch that will focus on local government transformation. That branch will focus on institutional development. This will, as I say, focus on building institutional resilience in local government. And the branch on local government management is the one that will be conducting hands-on performance monitoring and support interventions in municipalities, working together with provincial functions. The fifth branch will focus on the community led program, which is a program that currently exists and which focuses on the provision of work opportunities for members of the community that are otherwise unable to provide themselves. The fifth branch will be that of finance. At present, we have a branch called Finance and Corporate Services. What we seem to achieve is to have the office of the CFO that will be distinct from corporate services. And as you see, the last branch on this page is that of corporate services. We have at present one government component called Municipal Infrastructure Support Agents, which supports municipalities in facilitating the expenditure of the municipal infrastructure grants by providing technical support to those municipalities to implement their infrastructure projects. It is envisaged that in the shortest possible time, our National Disaster Management Center will also be established as a government component. Government components are institutions established in terms of the Public Service Act, which gives them a relative degree of flexibility in that whilst they operate within the broad parameters of public service, there are certain flexibilities that they enjoy that government departments otherwise do not, in order to enable them to respond to very dynamic situations they have to confront from time to time. So what we explain on slide number 23 is that the component infrastructure development is what I've just explained, that's about ensuring the delivery in municipalities through investment in infrastructure, and the disaster management component that we expect to focus on coordinating a national effort towards a coordinated system of disaster prevention, mitigation, and risk management. This strategic plan I've just outlined basically covers 9 strategic goals and about 16 strategic objectives. On the left-hand side of slide number 34, and then we'll continue up to slide number 27. On the left-hand side, we set up the goals. Goal number one being to create a functional local government system based on accountability for performance. And what you will find on the right-hand side is a strategic objective associated with that. I propose not to read all of the chapters, but just to indicate what the goals are and where the specific objectives that relate to them are to be found. Goal number two will be to ensure significant improvements in service delivery through sound infrastructure management. And the specific objectives that relate to that are in the second column. What is in the third column indicates what is already set out in the estimate of national expenditure, which is a project that the National Treasury produces, basically indicating what the resources that have been allocated are meant to be used for. And we try and demonstrate how these goals are aligned to what is already set up in the EMP. Our third goal relates to building institutional resilience and initiate the next phase of institution building in the local government. Number four is leading and supporting the creation of prosperous cities and towns by restructuring the space economy. Jefferson, what is increasingly clear is that RCTs face a unique set of challenges that are quite distinct from the day-to-day challenges that the rest of municipalities confront. In many ways, RCTs have become the microcosm of the challenges that face our country and the municipalities, the city municipalities, if you like, have to contend with matters that other categories of municipalities don't have to deal with. And in a sense, they carry with them the potential, and in fact some of them are already economic hubs of the country. And we believe that in fact most of them, if not all of them, have the possibility of becoming that. But as to how we structure them, how we work on them, has a bearing on whether or not they will be able to live up to that expectation. Goal number 5 has to do with strengthening intergovernmental arrangements for delivery of services, collaborative planning and oversight within our system of cooperative governance. This is of course associated with what is envisaged in the intergovernmental relations system. Goal number 6 is entrenching a culture of good governance and instilling a new morality of service and integrity in local governments, which is a very important component of the work that we have to do, even as we talk about tax base. Goal number 7 is local government public employment programs, as funded through our community work program. I've already spoken to this already in the earlier slide. We talked about the creation of work opportunities as we pursue the goal of having 1 million work opportunities by 2019. Goal number 8 is strengthening and coordinating and supporting effective integrated disaster management and fire services. And number 9 is refocusing and strengthening the capacity of COCTA to deliver on its mandate. As you will see, that goal number 9 is inward looking, in that it looks at what have we got that would enable us to achieve the goals we set ourselves. From slide number 28, this is where we set out how we have translated the strategic plan of the department, which is the 5-year plan, which has drawn inspiration from the medium-term strategic framework, which is the 5-year plan, into an annual program for the period commencing 1st April 2015 and then 31st March 2016. On slide number 28, in the center of that slide, we talk about strategic objective number 1, that of building accountability for performance in local government systems through setting and enforcing clear performance standards by March 2019. In that regard, we talk about the fact that we will be identifying municipalities in all provinces warranting activated intervention. And we will be doing so through coordinated efforts with sector departments, water and sanitation, human settlements, Department of Energy, the National Treasury, especially on natural spaces, financial management, Department of Rural Development and Landfall, etc. These are departments we will be coordinating our efforts with. In fact, the members of the committee will be happy to know that as part of operationalizing that spaces, we have already set up 9 provincial teams that are headed by Deputy Director General from both cooperative governance and traditional affairs, including our government component minister, and that these teams enjoy participation from various sections of the departments, both from the line function as well as support services, as well as participation from sector departments that are just referred to, water and sanitation, environment, human settlements, Department of Energy, including some of their components like ESCOM and the like, relating to the basic services that they are responsible for. As part of our commitment for the new financial year, we will be paid in our Section 48 reports, being a state of local government report. These reports reflect on the state of local government based on the work of the previous year. We'll also be documenting and publishing 20 best practices across in municipalities across the country, the purpose of which being to inspire those that are lagging behind to make sure that they themselves pick up their socks, make sure that they make necessary improvements to improve their ability to deliver to their citizens. We'll also be submitting assessments back to basic reports. We'll be engaging with Parliament from time to time on those reports to give you to keep the committee abreast, both this committee and the portfolio committee in the National Assembly, on what progress are we making with our back-to-basis interventions in various municipalities that have been identified as priority areas of intervention. I take it, Chairperson, if I may, that the committee will be aware that while back-to-basis is going to be a basic program, we have identified categories of municipalities that will be seen as priority for intervention. Those municipalities that are categorized as being dysfunctional, those would be our primary areas of focus for intervention. At the same time, we'll also be focusing on those municipalities that are at risk. These are municipalities that are not necessarily dysfunctional, but are not doing as well as they should. And that if they don't get the support, they face the risk of gravitating towards a dysfunctional state. But those would be the municipalities who will be giving more focus on attention. At the same time, we will continue to press on the shoulder those municipalities that are doing well to make sure that they retain that status. On slide number 29, in respect to objective number two of providing efficient and effective cooperative governance and administrative support services for COPSA to deliver on its mandate by March 2019, we will be developing an enterprise architecture for COPSA to make sure that our IT systems are integrated and that they are able to support our business effectively. We would like to take full advantage of what technology can offer to make sure that we work harder, at the same time, through the use of technology, we can work smarter and do more. We will be implementing our Back to Basics dashboards on municipal performance across the country. This is what we will be using from time to time in preparing our reports for our future interaction with this committee and the other committees. We'll also be undertaking a skill audit and implement outcomes thereof to make sure that we bring about the necessary improvements in the performance of the department as well as the performance of municipalities, which is where the actual delivery of citizens must take place. In respect of strategic objective number three, which is set out on slide number 30, there we talk about the introduction into Parliament of our Intergovernmental Monitoring, Support and Intervention Bill for processing. We expect that in the course of new financial year, we'll be introducing that into Parliament for processing, so that in the shortest possible time, that piece of legislation will be passed, which will bring greater clarity to certain aspects of our Section 139 interventions, which remain a bit unclear at this point in time, and those aspects relating to Section 100 of the Constitution, relating to interventions in provincial governments. Compared to 139, Section 100 is a bit, if you like, it's a bit of a standalone in that there isn't much being said about exactly how you go about doing this intervention. But Section 139 is a bit more elaborate in the Constitution. So this scheme bill, as we call it, fit to achieve exactly that. In greater clarity on how the interventions are undertaken and the role of the different stakeholders. We'll also propose to achieve, we talk here about reporting on the implementation on outcome 9, which we will develop, which is presented to our intergovernmental relations structures. Outcome 9 relates to an outcome that, outcome 9 relates to the achievement of a responsive, effective and efficient local government in a system that would enable local government to realize its constitutional mandate. On slide number 31, we talk specifically here about strategic objective number 4, which deals with implementing initiatives to improve financial sustainability, revenue management and audit outcomes in local governments by March 2019. This is pretty much the after year of the medium term. In this regard, we'll be implementing initiatives to influence the ability of municipalities to collect outstanding tax. We will be targeting 6 municipalities that we have prioritized for this initiative. We'll also be mounting a campaign on cultivating and improving a culture of payment. As we all know, Jefferson, in many areas of our country, many of our people are still trapped in a culture of non-payment for service since the 1980s. They perhaps have not woken up to the fact that there is a new democracy that dawned in 1994. But part of it may well be prompted by the fact that the services have been rendered in a very poor way, and that in improving the quality of services, we believe that part and parcel of cultivating that culture of people being willing to pay for the services. We'll also be focusing on improving audit outcomes. We're talking here about 58% of municipalities to get improvements of the audit opinion that the audit general has described in the past. We're now talking about the 2014-15 audit outcomes, and we're looking at 58%, and this is over and above those that have received the clean, clean audit opinion from the AG. We say that we need to see a steady increase in the opinion that is, or rather steady improvement in the opinion that is being expressed by the Auditor General. We will be monitoring and enforcing the functionality of municipal public accounts committees in all the functional municipalities across the country, including in those municipalities in respect of which the Auditor General has expressed an adverse opinion, including the disclaimer of opinion. We will be monitoring and assessing 152 municipalities in respect of their compliance with the Municipal Property Rates Act, and this we aim to do by the 31st of March 2018. On slide number 22, and I can see that I'm getting a bit of inertia, Jefferson, I'm spending a bit more time on the slide, but that is really the meat of the plan for the new year. But I'm happy to see guys from Jefferson if you would like me to gallop a little. On slide number 32, we present the strategic objective number 5, which focuses on promoting public confidence in the local government system by changing the relationship between citizens and local government and strengthening citizen management mechanisms. And this we aim to do by March 2019. In this regard, we'll be targeting 50 dysfunctional municipalities, making sure that we provide them with support to comply with the relevant public participation injunctions of the relevant legislation that deals with public participation. We're also looking at a nationwide citizen satisfaction survey. That, in a sense, will serve as a barometer of how the citizens perceive local governments, how they experience local governments on a daily basis in respect of a whole tapestry of services that local governments is responsible for providing. We'll be looking at 27 back-to-basics priority municipalities to make sure that they are supported to develop and implement citizen empowerment programs. Part of what back-to-basics is to achieve is to empower citizens to hold municipalities accountable. It's one thing to say municipalities will report to provinces, provinces will report to national government will, through, for an example, session 48 report, will report to parliament. At the same time, we want citizens to know that they can hold municipalities accountable. Citizens who live in the ward can hold the ward council accountable, and that's part of what we seek to achieve in this particular objective. On slide number 33, we focus on the strategic objective number 6 of strengthening anti-corruption measures and enforcing applicable legislation and policies by March 2019. In this area, we will be looking at the number of cases concluded in municipalities. But let's just start by saying that we will be looking at 100% of municipalities making sure that they implement anti-corruption strategies and plans, and that we'll be monitoring how they do this, looking at how they monitor how their municipalities themselves monitor monitor how effective their systems of dealing with corruption and how effective they are, and how the municipal council itself make sure that this bit of our work is focused on more directly. So we'll be looking at the number of cases concluded in municipalities where instances of corruption have been identified, where investigations have happened, where instances where a litany of forensic audits have been completed, the number of municipal councils have not yet acted on those. Part of our plan is to make sure that we follow through these forensic audits and make sure that where evidence of malfeasance has been identified, that such is tested through due process and that people are dealt with accordingly. We will establish a local government anti-corruption tribunal, which will make sure that people who are charged with corruption and fraud and other related set of misconduct appear for that tribunal. And this is what we aim to achieve in part because in many instances what we find is that municipalities don't have the capacity to run proper disciplinary processes. So setting up a tribunal of this kind is to make sure that we pool the resources you can master at a central level, but sufficient capacity to be able to deal with important cases that arise in municipalities across the country. These will not be all misconduct cases, but these will be focusing specifically on corruption cases. We will then generate an annual report to the minister on these cases, which report will then be shared with the committee from time to time as these matters are concluded. On slide number 34, we focus on strategic objective number 7, which deals with improving the system of disaster management and fire services across government by March 2019. In this regard, the National Disaster Management and Fire Services Advocacy and Public Awareness campaigns will be facilitated throughout the nine provinces to make sure that we increase public awareness about disasters, especially those associated with fire, and increase the ability of people to reduce the risk associated with such disasters. We will produce the first draft bill on fire services, which we hope to finalize at the end of the financial year, and this will then be processed into the system through cabinet, then into parliament in due time. On slide number 38, we focus on strategic objective number 8, which deals with improving the system of disaster management. This actually relates to the slide that we start with, but in this regard, we focus here on reporting on the implementation of already existing legislation, and this is the Disaster Management Monitoring and Evaluation Framework. On slide number 36, we focus on strategic objective number 9, which deals with facilitating and coordinating capacity-building initiatives in order to build a capable, or rather, to build capable municipalities by end of 31st March 2019. In this regard, we'll be looking at local government skills audits, development institutes, which will focus on providing training to councillors, as well as providing training to staff within the administration of municipalities, to make sure that councillors fully understand and are enabled through training to exercise their oversight over the administration of municipalities, and that the municipality administration is also well capacitated to fulfill the functions that they are charged with, to make sure that they deliver to the citizens in accordance with set our precedent. Of course, we also talk about the VAT PLA service standard, which must be observed, and we make sure that these are implemented. So as we build the capacity of councillors to make sure that they drive at their level politically the right programs that bring about. We're then focusing on the battery delay service standards, as well as the capacity building strategies and intervention plans, as I said, for councillors and officials, and that is what is set out on slide number 36. On slide number 37, that's strategic objective. We focus on strengthening the functionality of municipalities through the development and implementation of administrative institutional systems by the end of the medium term. In this regard, we'll be reporting on the status of filled posts of municipal manager and Section 58 managers, these are managers reporting to the municipal manager, and we'll be identifying priority municipalities where we've identified high vacancy rate. So we will actually be working with these municipalities to make sure that they fill this post, not just with warm bodies, but with people with adequate skills to fulfill the functions associated with those posts. We'll also be reporting on the status of the appointment of competence. This is the point I've already made, but also preparations for the 2016 local government elections will fall under this specific objective. We'll also be focusing on implementing the local government law amendment bill. In this regard, what we will do is process the bill through Parliament and make sure that once the law is passed, the amendments are then brought into operation as soon as possible to make sure that the necessary changes in our legislation are effective. We'll also be developing a delegation framework for office bearers within municipalities to make sure that we improve the efficiencies and effectiveness of our local government system. We'll be reporting on a number of corrective measures taken to enforce compliance with competence requirements as prescribed in our Municipal Systems Act regulation. As members will know, last year, February, as I recall, we published a set of regulations which deals with minimum competency requirements for various categories of senior members in our municipalities. On slide number 38, we focus on strategic objective number 11, dealing with facilitating the restructuring of city space economy through changes in land use planning and management, which is what we aim to achieve by March 2019. In this regard, we'll be looking at 12 districts to be supported with developing integrated development plans that reflect sectoral and spatial convergence by the target date. We'll also be identifying 8 cities and towns supported, to be supported to develop long-term strategies and SDFs by the target date. On slide number 39, we focus on strategic objective number 12, which deals with promoting good governance and an ethical culture and local governance by the end of the middle term. In this regard, we will be focusing on the application of consequence management, which is something which generally been criticized for in the past. In fact, the entire Republic has generally been criticized for not applying consequence management measures. This is what we will be focusing on, both in-house as well as making sure that these take place at municipal level. An annual oversight report on the state of local government will be generated on an annual basis, as I indicated earlier on our session for the 8th court, which will be due quite early in the new financial year. Will be tabled in Parliament, setting out what we found within the state of local government. And that will also give us a good sense of how well we're doing with the Back to Basics program, and to what extent the previous interventions, now complemented by Back to Basics, are making any changes at local government. We'll be conducting a code of conduct education at municipal level for everybody, both councillors as well as members of staff, to make sure that both municipal employees conduct themselves accordingly. We will also have records on the number of staff dismissed in municipalities. As you will have heard, we now have established a database of people who are dismissed from municipalities for various types of misconduct. And that database is meant to make it impossible for people who commit misconduct at municipal level to run away from that, or rather to commit a misconduct in one municipality, run away and be employed in another municipality, or leave the municipal sector and be employed in provincial or national level. So the idea is to make sure that database is utilized by all the spheres of government to make sure that if you cause trouble in one area, you must know that you cause trouble for the entirety of the area. Of course, there are time frames that are associated with different types of misconduct. It's not that it's going to be a lifelong thing, but certainly there are different time frames associated with that. This is meant to be corrected in the moment of change. On slide number 40, specific objective number 13, we're still supporting the implementation of sustainable infrastructure development and maintenance initiatives in order to improve the quality of services and extend infrastructure to unserved communities by 2019 March. In this regard, we will be providing support to municipalities to reduce households without access to basic level of municipal services. We will also be supporting municipalities to reduce households without access to infrastructure for basic services. And in this regard, our municipal support infrastructure support agent will be leading the charge in making sure that technical support is provided to municipalities to make sure that they roll out infrastructure, all of which most of our basic services are laid. We will be supporting 45 municipalities to spend at least 7% of their operational budget on maintenance and infrastructure. What we have found is that our biggest challenge in most municipalities is not so much the rollout of new infrastructure, more than it is the maintenance of old infrastructure. Most of that, or some of that infrastructure, perhaps, has been buried in the ground for 50, 60 years ago. It has not been maintained over a long time. So part of what we seek to inculcate is to make sure that municipalities now spend 7% of their budget on this. We're starting with 47 municipalities, and we'd like to see what success we can make. And the number will then be increased to make sure that all municipalities across the country can do this. So we will be providing direct support to 45 municipalities in this regard. 55% of our municipalities will be supported to upgrade their indigenous register. Many of our municipalities do not keep decent indigenous registers. Many of them would have these registers. But when you look at some of these registers, you find names of people who are not supposed to be on this register. Sometimes they have councillors themselves on those registers, or people who were on the council before, public servants, currently serving government. I dare not say, but I hope not find the names of members of parliament on some of those indigenous registers. Based on some of the things we've seen, I wouldn't be surprised that there might just be. Often these things might happen without members of parliament knowing. I'm looking at the honourable member. On slide number 41, we're looking at strategic objective number 13, supporting the implementation of sustainable infrastructure development and maintenance initiatives in order to improve the quality of services and extend infrastructure to our service communities by 2019. In this regard, as I'm sure members are aware, the President in the State of the Nation address last year, June, announced the establishment of an interministerial task team. We sometimes refer to it as an IMT, but it's in fact called the Interministerial Task Team on Service Delivery. This brings a number of ministries together to focus on that work. That IMC or IMTT will be taking resolutions from time to time, that these resolutions will be implemented to make sure that infrastructure rolls out and that services are indeed rendered to our people. 50 municipalities will be supported to capture infrastructure assets on an IT system which is housed at our municipal infrastructure support agency called the MIPMIS. This is, in a sense, a management information system that captures all assets that are held by the municipalities. We're now talking infrastructure assets. We don't worry much about what is in the cupboards. We worry more about what have we buried on the ground that is meant to facilitate delivery to our people. And that will be captured in that system. 45 municipalities will be supported to deliver infrastructure assets registers, and as I said, which will be captured in that system called MIPMIS. On slide number 42, we have our strategic objective number 15, which focuses on facilitating private sector investment through the implementation of innovative programs that stimulate local economies, which is what we hope to do by March 2019. In this regard, we will have identified municipalities supported to implement programs in partnership with the private sector. This will aim to make sure that we maximize possibilities of
collaborative efforts with departments like the Department of Small Businesses and a whole range of other players within and outside the state to make sure that there is proper investment at a local level that will help build local economies, which will in turn create employment opportunities for more people, which will in turn increase the revenue base in the country, because the more people are employed, the more they will be able to pay for their services. So local government, local economic development is a very important part of our work, and that if properly done, it will enable municipalities to increase their revenue base. On slide number 43, which is the last slide that I will be presenting this morning, we focus on strategic objective number 16, which deals with providing and maintaining 1 million work opportunities through building capacity of participants and establishing strategic partnerships by March 2019. In this regard, in addition to the 197,000 work opportunities already in place, we will, within the limits of the budget allocated, we will be creating 10,000 additional work opportunities in the short term. Were it not for the fact that our budget has been significantly cut in this area, we would be talking much bigger numbers. In fact, if I cut my mind back, we should ordinarily be aiming to have a cumulative figure of something in the region of about 325,000 square opportunities cumulative. But we wouldn't be anywhere near that, if my memory serves, simply because the resources are not available to enable us to create new, more than it enables us to sustain the work opportunities that we currently have. We'll be facilitating training and skills development for all our participants in the community work program, the idea being to enable them to exit the program with skills that will enable them to enter the mainstream labor market. I take it that honourable members are aware of the objectives of the community work program. That it's a program that people can be on for a long time to come, but as long as they haven't as yet gotten the opportunity to gain entry into the mainstream labor market. But this guarantees them 100 days per year, which translates into about 2 days a week on anyone else. You'll be happy to know that this also augments the income that able-bodied people who might be on some of the social protection program can in fact augment their income through this particular kind of initiative. But you also have a sizable number of seasonal workers who out of season that fall back on this program to make sure that they continue to provide for themselves and their families. We'll be establishing 5 partnerships to expand the CWP program in the new financial year. As I said, 10 additional municipalities with CWP sites will be established by the 31st of March next year to make sure that we then roll out the 10,000 additional work opportunities over and above the existing 197,000 work opportunities. If the fiscal situation improves, we think that drawing on this number, it should be possible for us to meet our 1 million work opportunities target by 2019. Jackson, that concludes the cooperative governance component of our presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for making the DJ on applause. The honourable members are going to start interacting with the presentation. You'll be afforded an opportunity to ask if you have any questions. Who else?
Honorable Julius, Honorable Chief. Is that all? Is that all? Thank you very much. Only 3+1. This is my hand also in the fourth part. Thank you very much. Honorable Mr.
Chair. It's just the first chair for all the time. I've been doing this for many years. To start with the last one, it's a question I like to ask all the time, and I'm always answered constantly. The issue of the equity chair in relation to disability. One, I hope that this one will, at least he will deliver 20,000 disabled people into that problem. One. Two, relating to that is the issue of the WEPS program. It's in this term. I need promises, and I will ask this question in March again. How many of disabled people are part of this West program? It doesn't exist, it doesn't happen on the ground. I hope they will this time around make sure. Please, DG, in the social development, same question has been asked. He hasn't ever checked for the record for the last time in Kodinacha. And I consistently ask this question. I hope he would at some point make it just a personal project. You know, just to make sure when even in these managers in the department, to say, I've delivered managers now. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, so the equity agenda. And the third part relating to this equity issue is the program that the municipalities are running, which is a special program. And the budget that they allocate in this special program. So for the truth, sure, is that even the special programs, I don't know who designs them, who's accountable for the policy directives on this program. This program is even meant, a very few municipalities have find it in their own way to even place a disabled person on some of the in the programs, I said. So I think it's important that these parts, it's not part of any of the plans. Be included in the plans. So let's look at what are these special programs meant to deliver, you know, or what are they still to deliver as such, because they're not both helping municipalities to even complete the initial policies so that disabled people benefit. So I'm raising these points and I think they are quite critical for me, and I continue to raise them until Jesus comes again. Right, the other points then, Chair. I'm a bit perturbed by the creation, the establishment of a tribunal. Another addition on top of other institutions that deal with corruption. Perhaps there will be more detail on what is this tribunal. Just now in October, the PEM Bill established the Bureau. You know, and now there's another tribunal coming on. And I'm not too sure how will it work within the framework of anti-corruption initiatives of government. And looking at the fact that with municipalities now, they will be in this, we've been raising these matters as a committee on talked about the investigations, people receiving salaries, others. So for me, I'm not sure, Chair, whether a tribunal, perhaps if powers and functions and the regulatory framework for the tribunal is quite is there, and we will see it, not just in the plan as such, but let's see what tools, what teeth, whatever mechanisms or measures that this tribunal will have, because if these matters can drag until the selection of the corporate municipalities, and what kind of is just the teaching said misconduct. It's not so much misconduct, but it's other matters as such. But if then it's not misconduct, but why then the tribunal is a question in my mind that needs to be clarified, because then you have all your crime institutions, your SIUs, there are so many chairs of these tribunals. So I'm interested really on what are we trying to do? You know, what kind of crimes that warrant or corruption that warrants this specific tribunal?
Okay.
And are you cutting me?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that's what you are meant to be taking note of.
No, sir. I'm asking the DG, not the chair. Don't take note. The DG must take note. Alright, and then now you've dislodged me, so I'll come back.
You will. My apologies. But I wanted to say, let's not overemphasize. I think, in most instances, all of the chair is to facilitate. As and when one picks up that a point has been brought home, I think it would be more flexible to say your point is taken. Please bear with me, it's not your intention to interrupt. My apologies if it is taken in that context. And I will say it if I get an opportunity again, I'll have in front.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Allah will do that. The minister has the initiative where the outer boundaries of the municipalities are changed now. I didn't get anything in the strategic plan around that. Maybe it's because it came after you planned and then something else came. I don't know. It seems more sinister now than ever before. The changing of this outer boundary, so surely it should have formed part of your strategic plan. It's one of the biggest things of COFTA for this year, yet it hasn't formed part of your strategic plan. That's the concern I have. And then the grant specialists, these people that will work with the big grants and stuff, I would believe that these people are they. Will they transfer skills in municipalities, or will they just come in and take care of the big grant? Because then we don't serve the purpose, because we let them every year coming in, doing something. Whereas we have people that are supposed to be skilled in the local municipalities that are getting paid, because this is our waste of money. Every time we have a problem, we throw money as a problem. Who will these people be? 40 or how many will they be? That will be thrown in there and they will help with the big grant country one. My thinking is that we need skills, because municipalities should be able to do it on their own. And now we're just spoon feeding them again, in my view. I would think that we can add, if it is, the idea to skill municipalities, and I would agree, but if we want to take over a task of municipality, we're not doing anything for the municipality. Instead, we're taking over some of the funds and not giving them skills that they need to use in the municipality. I like the idea that you said on the last slide, I think, that there will be private-public partnership, but I don't think it's a concerted effort. Because one of the biggest problems that we have, or challenges that we have in local government, is they have too many people in indigenous councils. And I think developing the local economy should be more prioritized. I don't think there's a concerted effort in the place here. At least collaboration with other departments like NED and so forth to ensure that, you know, we get more income in the municipality. The tribunal is also, I think it's a good idea.
But I think it's reactionary. It should be coupled with something more proactive. You know, opening up, saying the process to the public. And you stop a lot of corruption there. Instead of getting them when they already took the money and ran away with it. Just a suggestion I would make to share on SO 9. In terms of queues for local government, again, I would appeal that I don't see anything where except screening, except for the CWP program, a generic training, I think COPTA should take an approach to provide bursaries to students just to entice them to study in care skills in local government so that we can have a sort of competitive skills pool in local government. And I think that is what we need. We do not have skills in local government. That's why a person can jump from this municipality to that municipality, just can jump from this municipality to parliament and so forth. And I think we need to work on this one. Our own, COPTA's own skills fund. So we train municipal managers. And I don't mean we train CEOs. I mean, we train youngsters, you know, we provide them with bursaries so that they come into the school. The CWPs, I think we need to thoroughly investigate the CWPs because I don't think currently we are missing the time of CWPs. The CWPs are more used in South African municipalities in the political world. If they don't do political work, they turn into start somewhere or walk around and you know, it's a station to get income. And I think we really need to work on that one because I think it is rather selfish of us to use them as political funds. It is really selfish, and the budget is not meant for that. I think we need to investigate this thing so that we really provide these people with the necessary skills. We use CWP for what it is meant to be, and not what it is out there. The word is that these people are all politically protected, either to that party or that party, and they will do political work. They will be used for political work. During the elections, during the year, they will be used for that. And I think we need to look at that. And that's my theory only, so that we can look at the first of these people. You know, they want to be friends. They want to be something one day. But in fact, we are selfish as politicians. We are talking about us now. As politicians, we use this. And it should be there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. May I also give the opportunity just because Honorable DC has a few questions. One, in your presentation, just like you spoke about the cooperative government and you linked it to the provision that is not in the municipality. I just want you to highlight your interpretation of Section 99, Section 3 of the Constitution. You say that the municipality has the right to govern on its own initiative. I'm saying this thing not necessarily to say I give on your understanding, but just to say what you clarify. Recently we visited Portugal and municipality. And what we pick up is that a skill of the municipality took it upon itself to write a letter to the minister so the minister can have an announcement in the municipality. I'm just saying, behind the background of this autonomy, the meeting about this has been the provision of social rights, and in such a way, it was a social bill of the Constitution. The truth. You spoke about the new culture, but you never give us a picture of the current culture, and what has informed teachers, I think, follows towards the suggestion and the view of the honorable member. What were the deficiencies in the previous culture that prompted the department to introduce this new structure in the form of branches, particularly the branches that you spoke about? On the slide 24, Honorable DG, you spoke about the second goal.
and not only the even appeared on a great number of occasions. This target date March 2019. Now I'm also raising this concern, even behind the back of my mind, that we heard targeted education, a specific target was put, a specific target was also put. Yes, the target March 2019. What is informed it and how we are speaking? So if you can just normally also. Slide 7, goal number 7. Around the figures. Indeed, there will always be perceptions around CWP being used for a political purpose. You have to recall, DG, that CWP are not necessarily coming back. They are just there to allay the challenge of poverty in our community and also be able to give our own community skills in order to pursue their future careers. But what I was saying, one of the critical challenges that one has said is also around how are they doing it. You are saying it's 2 days a week in the morning to the day. I'm telling you, go and check. It might be true that in most instances during the course of the day, the CWP members will be working on the site. Recently, in one municipality that I happen to know, what they did, they took hours that are supposed to be performed. Instead of having these people on 2 days, the whole day, they ensure that they are only there in the morning. As they shoot the morning hour, then they are not released. And in the afternoon, you don't see people that are exhausted, that are showing any reluctance to work. So I'm just asking myself, why can't you think within that platform, so say, instead of holding them the whole day, then you find them basking on the sun in most instances. Why can't we say, let them engage in the morning, and I'm telling you, you have seen it. In the morning, they are waking. But just after lunch, you're going to start to see a problem. And maybe it's a question of military. But I'm just saying, suggesting that instead of having 2 days, why can't we use them in the morning, only the few hours that we have in the 8 hours? The other slide number 39, the best one. You spoke about performance in most instances under that side. But our challenge, whether we like it or not, we don't have consequences, especially for underperformance. What is the plan of the department, especially for municipalities that are underperforming? What is the mechanism or any consequences that will be put in place as a result of underperformance? You spoke about the BNCB. How far are you? He has been waiting, I think it's for quite some time. How far are you in terms of that? That would help us when the government and power issues of intervention don't have much chance. Slide number 37 is about anti-corruption. I'm not sure because today we are dealing more of the perception than the reality. And the role of media DG in terms of training our society is every successful man and woman in the street has accumulated whatever that he has accumulated on corruption. What is the plan of the department to ensure that we have this tainted mindset where every successful person is being tainted black, whereas it's not black, regardless of that. I think the whole of the media in terms of anti-corruption, to an extent that even foreign countries, I must assume that they might be perceiving us as a corrupt country. And if you check in most instances, there are internal struggles at the weak environment. Few individuals are selling information that are not even tested. And in most instances, we forget that people are innocent up until proven by the court of law. But in our country, what is happening? You are being qualified even before you can get the other side of the store. So I'm saying the role of the department in terms of dealing with perception, you know, to get this tendency that is really right in our society. Abuse of media. We have observed it. Our media, in most instances, they will never come and project, in most instances, what is positive about the country. Go and pick up any allegation, even those that are not being tested. Even our own officials are here for fun. We feed up this wrong information without it being tested. So I'm saying it's the one in fact also to know. What is the plan of the department in terms of the capacity to do? The same example that I related to in terms of Ozore. You interact with some of the counselors, and you could really determine or make a determination that in most instances, how councillors are engaging on issues of local government. There's a serious challenge of capacity.
But the main challenge that I want to advance, what is your plan, especially to those four counselors who underwent intensive training, but they still remain the same? It has happened. Maybe people have reached the city. So I'm not sure. What is the plan to ensure that really we do something? Because in most instances, we have seen people that are undergoing training every second moment, money is being paid, they sign attendance register and feed. But then when you look at outcomes or outputs, it says they remain the same. You go and check also the role of FX. They underwent training, but go and check the base of the annual report. They can't analyze that. Go and check not only the annual financial statement. They can hardly understand that. But they are there as MPs. I think are correct on our juniors. They are part of it. Are we planning correctly in terms of the training needs, or are we doing the training because it's a normal thing to do? So I'm just worried. What is the plan that we could help us to avoid that? Lastly, from my side, if you check in terms of your ATP, you did not afford us an opportunity to tabulate your performance target in terms of the same with the used to go, percentage-wise. By this time, we want to achieve 30%, 40%, 50%. So, to me, most of the case, we're just counting it in terms of numbers. But how part of it, how will you reach that number? Have you stipulated percentage-wise? That would also help us as and when we measure it. We are able to measure it on the basis of the baseline that we have put on. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. There's a handful of questions that you have posed. I'll read it, there are a few members have asked. I will attempt them as best as I can. I can take contact in fact that there's a sizable contingent from the department who might wish to embellish some of the responses I will give where they feel it necessary. The first question that was posed by Honourable Demander has to do with matters of equity. It could be that my memory doesn't serve very well, but in my day in social development, I thought we were able to provide direct responses to Honourable Member Demander and others on statistical information on the numbers of the youth disability that are involved in the various programs. Because in social development, there were specific interventions related to people with disabilities. Those would include the protective workshops and the like. But in this instance, under CWP, there isn't a protective workshop arrangement. But what is understood is that all vulnerable groups must be deliberately targeted through this program. Women, youth, people with disabilities, and the like. Perhaps my fault is that I didn't anticipate this question. So as a result, I'm unable to give the breakdown to how many people with disabilities are employed on the program. But I undertake that we will provide that response in writing, Honourable Member, if you will permit. We will also give an indication as to, because I think the first two questions, in fact, relate specifically to how many people with disability form part of numbers that are currently on the program. We will provide that information in writing to them. The third question that was posed has to do with what is the program meant to deliver? And how do people with disabilities benefit from it? CWP, although it forms part of government public employment programs, it is defined in fact as a social protection measure. Is an anti-poverty intervention. It is meant to
able people who would otherwise be unable to provide for themselves to grow income through their participation in programs that in a program that is intended to do good community work. Now, and because part of the question that has been asked is, what is the program then intended to deliver? Communities get involved in determining what work needs to be done. This is doing meaningful work in the community. It's not the same as saying to people, go down this road, pick up a trench, once you've dug it up, then close it up and we'll pay you some money. No. It's about identifying what meaningful work can be done in the community. An example that comes to mind, which tends to be quite dominant in a number of areas, is the cutting of grass. In many instances, you find that grass that is adjacent to roads that members of the community use tend to be a source of great vulnerability for people going to work very early in the morning to pick up the transport, or even women, young girls going to and from school. What they tend to do is to make sure that that grass is cut at all times. Now, this is not something they will do necessarily every day, because grass doesn't go that far. But they will cover a whole box and make sure that grass is cut at all times. But that would not be the only thing they do. As communities identify what other areas of intervention are required as part of meaningful community work, these community development, community workers program participants will be drawn into do those pieces of work. So in a sense, communities decide how they want to use the participants of the community work program to do things that will benefit the community. There was a question raised about, and then my colleague has favored me with information. Looks like our records indicate that we have 2,206 participants that are part of our community work program. And in percentage terms, this is 1.1%. This information I got from our national program manager for community work program, Mr. Joseph Carver, who sits in the background. So that is the statistical information. Perhaps I should preempt the next question and say, this is completely beneath the thresholds the government has set for public employment, even within its own rest. That what we would aim to achieve as a minimum is 2%. But that we, where possible, we should actually propose to achieve much higher participation by people with disabilities on this program. Honorable Demande expressed some disconcertment about the creation of the tribunal. Of course, other members of the committee spoke quite positively about the tribunal. This tribunal is born out of the fact that many municipalities either do not have the capacity, or perhaps in some instances do not even have the will to initiate disciplinary proceedings against transgressors within their ranks. And we're talking here not about general misconduct. We're talking here specifically about misconduct that involves corruption. We are saying that in all cases involving corruption, we would like to expedite it. We do not want to leave it to the disciplinary processes of the municipality for them to deal with. But that we would like to have a concerted approach to a tribunal that's been proposed, which tribunal would then be able to deal with those cases on an expeditious basis. But it also creates an opportunity to set good precedent on how municipalities should in fact effectively deal with matters of corruption within their ranks. This tribunal does not purport
to conduct a criminal trial, it's still a labor relations tribunal. You deal with these matters within the labor relations dispensation. The SIU, the Hawks, and others, including the entirety of the anti-corruption task team of government, will continue to deal with the criminal prosecution of matters. Remember, corruption in the context of labor relations is a misconduct. We can dismiss you if we find you guilty of misconduct, but we don't send you to jail because we found you guilty. You must still be prosecuted in the court of law, and that your case must still be established beyond reasonable doubt. For us, it is enough in a tribunal to establish your guilt or otherwise on the basis of, on the balance of probability. So the different standards would work. So this is a labor relations tribunal and not a criminal or a pseudo-criminal court. I hope it does attempt, and I do attempt to, or that I have attempted to cast more light. If not, Madame Majid will sit at the extreme end of the table, who's responsible for this area of work, will shed more light. Honorable Chessy, we take well the compliments and the comments you've made on the area of the mission statement. With regards to the back-to-back reports on how well we're doing, there isn't, by the way, a legislative requirement that this conduct says you will file these reports as frequently as that. But because back-to-basics form part of our annual performance plan, every time we come to the committee, there's a standard that says we prepare a quarterly report to file. So through that, as we tell you about our performance will mirror the extent to which we are succeeding or not succeeding in implementing that basis. So that, I suppose, will be a frequency with which we do it. And then each time we come to Parliament, we will be happy to interact with the committee on that basis. Of course, in addition to this, on an annual basis, the Minister will still submit Section 48 report, which gives an indication of what is the state of local government. And that, too, will speak to what successes are we making on our perspective of our back-to-basis program. On the Section 139 interventions, I think you spoke in passing at this point that the committee has not seen any report. I shall cause the report to be prepared as soon as possible, so that that report is in fact submitted to the committee. I would have preferred that the minister should see it first before it is submitted. If he were around, I would say that by Friday this week you should have that report. On the impact, I think the broader limit on the fact that municipal public accounts committees, in the way they are currently established, have some shortcomings. They are established, first of all, as a subcommittee of council, which can at any time be disbanded at will of the majority in house, which is always undesirable. In a sense, it poses the risk that the more effective you are as a committee, and if it so happens that you find yourself among people who are happy with the negative status quo, that they can simply disestablish you as a committee. We certainly must find ways and means of strengthening the dispensation that can protect any committee of this kind in a much better way. And we will make it part of our mission to work towards that. On the matter relating to the database, I think we take the point that's made, that I think, in a sense, the database is welcome. But there was a comment made about how we are using administrators, and the case of Makana was given as an example. I think, indeed, it is going to be very important that when we engage services of administrators or even acting municipal managers in instances where there is perhaps not a municipal manager in place, or where there is a municipal manager but there is in fact a need for an administrator to come into the picture, that we find someone who will be able to give full attention to that work. I am unable to give a full account of why the province made this choice and this punishment in this instance. Suffice it to say that this intervention by the province was based on the request of council. What I understand the committee has identified as some flaws in the section 139 intervention. I will not comment about that now, but what I will talk about is the fact that this intervention came at the instance of the municipality itself. It is quite unusual, because normally it would be the province taking a view on the municipality. But in this instance, the municipality identified specific shortcomings within itself, and then sought the assistance of the province, requesting that kind of intervention. And as I understand it, there was at some point an acting municipal manager seconded by the provincial department. And I don't think the presence of that minister can necessarily took away that acting MS. So in a sense, there must have been a complementary kind of role between the acting MM and the administrator. But I can't say that with great certainty. And of course, there may well be some challenges in relation to that kind of configuration. Honourable Member Tunis, you've raised questions about the new changes, practically talking about whether the practice basics program is predicated on scientific research. What we did, which actually helped us model the work we were going to do and we are already doing under practice basics, was that we initially did a desktop exercise that looked at the state of municipalities. And once we did that, we then engaged with every province. Which provinces have already also conducted their own exercise. And then we compared data, and then we agreed in the end that the true state of affairs. And this true state of affairs should have been established through a collaborative effort between our national officials and supported by the research that we do in-house, as well as the work that the provinces themselves have done. And we have put all those pieces of work together to come up with what we consider a picture on the basis of which we can work. A minister's attitude is if you are to commission what would be popularly referred to as scientific research, with research has been commissioned for a long time, these things can take quite a sizable amount of time. Each time we actually don't always have. But that more often than not, you don't need something that pretends to be conclusive. But you need something that resonates with what you know, and you work on the basis of it. And then you will improve on it as you go along, rather than wait for a perfect product called an outcome of scientific research. Because if you wait for that, by the time you get it, the situation has gotten much worse. When in fact you can hit the ground immediately based on the information you have, and you improve the quality of it. So we are now working with a number of other players who continue to give us feedback on how this is happening. The municipalities themselves continue to share information with us on how things are turning out in their situation. We are conducting a visit. I mentioned earlier on that we have 9 provincial practice teams that visit municipalities in each province. and that as they go around conducting those visits, that also presents them with an opportunity to verify whether the status as they understand it from the sector exercise is as true as what they find on the ground. And in a sense, that's how we are continuing with this work. With regards to the Section 22 initiative of dealing with unviable municipalities, this is work that is already underway. It is not in our current annual performance plan, and you're quite correct, it's not reflected in the new annual performance plan. This is perhaps a matter we should give consideration to. Suffice it to say that work, it is anticipated, will be completed by not later than the middle of this year. The latest would probably be July, but all going well, that work should be completed by June. Because it could be concluded well in time for preparatory work in relation to the 2016 local government elections. Which means that the Municipal Demarcation Board must still have an opportunity to then delimit municipal wards within those municipalities, and that the IEC must still be in a position to its work in preparation for the 2016 elections next year. So that work will, as of necessity, be concluded 3 months into the new financial year. And I think you're quite right that whatever achievement we make, we might not be able to reflect on as part of the report of the work we have done, because it's not entirely yet, is a point that we take, and we will find a way of including that in our annual performance. On the matter relating to the Ministry of Infrastructure grant specials, I assume in this instance this is how you understood my reference to our Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency being a body that enables municipalities to spend on their municipal infrastructure grants by providing technical support, project management, town planning, this and that and the other. What gave birth to the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent was a long-standing realization. Many municipalities, especially rural ones, are unable to attract specialists, town planners, engineers, etc. And that because of that, it probably would be easier, and maybe let me start by saying, and there are real reasons why municipalities are faced with this challenge. I don't know which province you come from or remember, but if, for example, you were from the Northern Cape, for an example. So let us suppose you were from the Western Cape, and if you came from an area called Ogmees, you will know that you can have multitudes of engineers and town planners stationed in Kimber, but none of them might easily be attracted to go and work in Ogmees, because they will have to live there. And it's many kilometers to drive there. But if you were to create a vehicle, okay, because either way to live there, they have to take their family to live there. They have to make do with what they find from the point of view of education for their kids and many others. But the alternative then would be to create a vehicle that doesn't necessarily tie people to employment at that local level, but that you employ them through a vehicle that can deploy them as and when their services are required to those areas. It's not merely an attempt to disempower municipalities from acquiring the city, rather than it being born out of that realization that these municipalities have not been able to practice skills, and that the prospects are not looking good in the long term, that they will ever be able to do that. So this is a pool of people, call it scarce gifts that municipalities are unable to attract, then you keep them in a better the private-public partnerships to promote local economic development. This is an area of work where we have not been particularly successful in the past. We've been quite bogged down on developing policy instead of seeing real implementation going and learning from real attempts and supporting initiatives that already exist. And part of what we're looking at now is to emphasize more on collaboration, which is why we look at how are we going to partner the Department of Small Business Enterprises. We're now working together with the Department of Tourism on how to can municipality use tourism as a way and means of increasing their revenue. But in and around tourism, there are opportunities for people to set up small markets for things that they can produce themselves to sell to tourists and the but also create a vertical balance. There is always a temptation, as I think honourable members will be aware. Shopping malls tend to be, are penetrating many of our townships now, sometimes even villages. And what you will find is that
can I suggest that these parts of the remaining of the ancestors, they are left with less than an hour. They are still going to do another presentation. And we will deal with the presentation for all of them. That's my question. Because I'm afraid we are going to leave here, leaving the other directory.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I just
do
maybe the wisdom of other members? There's a suggestion that we call specifically on this one, then we go to the next presentation, and as and when we come back, then we change that for the main question, then the new one from the national.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to second the I'm afraid that the second question is not
and the approach would be we are forced. The second consultation should be named and we need thereafter to know the question that we have and complete that this question is not appropriate to be answered. Then we can accommodate the remaining presentation with questions. Can I suggest that we don't speak, please? Because literally it's almost my question that I'm in case you have a follow-up question on that, I humbly request you just for now, then be given an opportunity after the presentation. I think it's more for the people. Gigi, thousand apologies for the interruption, but I think you can, in the spirit of saying, there's also time to be more flexible to other presentations, but you still can be. This will also give you an ample opportunity to everything, especially on those in the confession of life. Okay, thank you very much. Can we give easy measure?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. This is possibly one of the chair and one of the members. I will also try and follow your advice. We just speak to this. I'm talking with the vision of the department to transform cohesive, develop and sustainable traditional and interfaith communities. The mission statement saying it is informed by MGP, MCSF, the government outcomes, and also the legislation that govern the Department of National Affairs. And we say the department's mission is to transform, develop, harmonize, and cohesiveness of traditional affairs institutions through monitoring and providing support to the institution in its administration of the affairs, developing mechanisms for structures of national leadership to support municipalities in the identification of community needs, facilitating the involvement of traditional communities in the development or amendment of IDPs, etc. I'll not go through all the mixed cases.
Maybe
we are
required to go straight
to the... I will go straight to the... that is why I have to have the program that I have not straight to the...
Yes, however, in case any honorable member would wish to engage on any matter that relates to the first line, you'll be at liberty to respond.
And then we have seven strategic objectives. The first one is to integrate and align planning, performance, monitoring, reporting, information management, and communication systems within traditional affairs sets, and to improve internal control to promote safe, healthy, and legal initiation practices, to promote socioeconomic and cultural development, to increase the number of functional structures of traditional leadership, to develop, review, monitor, and support implementation of traditional affairs policies, to facilitate collaborative relations of institutional traditional leadership. And those are the seven strategic objectives. And the next slide will just show you the programs plus the entities that are part of the department. So we have administration, which is program one, program two, research, policy, and education, program three, institutional support and coordination, and then we have the National House of Professional Leaders and the Commission on Different Things. I'll go straight to the predetermined objectives. Yes, the first one, which is administration. The program has the following objectives: to integrate and align planning, performance, monitoring, reporting, information management, and to improve internal control systems. The first one with a target that talks to the integration and alignment of planning, performance, monitoring, reporting, information management, and communication systems. We are saying that we'll come up with a 5-year integrated traditional affairs sector plan, which includes traditional affairs core sector indicators developed. Because of a new department, provinces were established before us. So we are trying to make sure that provinces and our plans are aligned so that we can be able to achieve all our objectives. And then the next one is four provinces by 2016-17 annual performance plan must be aligned to the traditional affairs sector plan. And then policy on managing organizational performance information must be developed and implemented. And one evaluation of traditional affairs policies and programs conducted. And then the next one is to improve the internal control systems, being a newly established department, that is very crucial. And the PAAP post-audit action plan developed and implemented, and 10 audits conducted. The second branch program is the research policy and legislation determined objectives. The program has the following strategic objectives: to develop, review, monitor, and support implementation of traditional affairs policies and legislation, to promote peace, stability, culture, heritage, and of cohesiveness within traditional communities. And we have that slide 27, to develop, review, monitor, and support implementation of traditional affairs policies and legislation, that we're targeting to have one bill only, which is the initiation bill, supplementing the existing legislation that we have on initiation. And the next one is to promote peace, stability, culture, heritage, and cohesiveness within traditional affairs. With the target, traditional leadership protocol guidelines for true kingship endorsed by the kingship, kinship, and so on. In order to deal with the issues that we currently experience, we think that the protocol issues and guidelines would also assist in terms of having traditional communities respected by other communities, so that is, they understand these different protocols. That will assist a lot. And then 10% of issues lodged before 31st March 2015 must be resolved. And 1% increase in the number of traditional communities with cultural and heritage projects that are advanced social cohesion. And 1%, of course, is 1% of 829 traditional councils. and which is quite a large number. One national project in the heritage and the cultural promotion strategy implementation plan implemented. And that we're also considering the capacity we have, which is very limited. And the next one is institutional support and coordination, predetermined objectives. The program has the following strategic objectives: to increase the number of functional structures of traditional leadership, to facilitate collaborative relations of the institution of traditional leadership with 3 tiers of government, civil society and private sector, to improve service delivery and socio-economic development in traditional communities. And that is the first predetermined objective. We're saying 33 traditional councils, PC, must be functional. We have to make them functional. At the moment, many of them are functional because they are not supported in terms of resources, you know, both financial and human resources. 8 traditional councils documented and kept record of traditional court decisions and filing them with the clerk of courts. And 2 houses of traditional leaders complying with the promotion of Access to Information Act. And the 2 projects in the National Traditional Leader Support Program implemented. And the next predetermined objective, which is to facilitate collaborative relations of the institution of traditional leadership within the 3 tiers, we say 1 partnership with mineral resources and Anglo-Black functional and benefiting Northwest and Limpopo province. And which means it's a partnership which involves the communities, traditional communities, the Mineral Resource Department, Development Bank of Southern Africa, and so on. So we want to see the working. Quite a number of people in these areas are ripped off in terms of social benefits and those kinds of things, companies that are operating in this area. We want to make sure that we support those communities. And then the National House of Traditional Leaders has the following strategic objective: promote safe, healthy, and legal institution practices and support the Department of Health HIV and AIDS awareness program and promote socioeconomic and cultural development within traditional communities. And that is determined objective, we're saying 10% reduction in fatalities resulting from the initiation practice. It is 10% of where we are now. In terms of summer initiation last year, a lot of work was done in collaboration with all stakeholders and traditional leaders in the forefront. And we have seen a marked reduction of fatalities, and it's at 10% from that number. And the National House of Traditional Leaders HIV and AIDS support project implemented in collaboration with the Department of Health estimates. Already there is an agreement, an MOU that has been signed. There's this collaboration that is taking place and awareness programs in those communities. Initiation field drafted as well. And then to promote socio-economic and cultural development within traditional communities. 2 projects in the National House Program for Socio-Economic and Cultural Development of Traditional Communities implemented. I think that's I will end the thanks.
Thank you very much.
May I afford, in the absence of Digi Mose, me an opportunity to allow members to give you the presentation. And now I'm not for that. Is she the only one on this presentation? And I would have can I also take note of your hand? Thank you. Those are the 2 hands that I noted. Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
And I'm going to be mad. Are you fine? Thank you very much. If not fine, I'm fine. Okay. And I'm going to pull
it. Thank you, sir. Money is on the, let me first welcome the presentation. And I think that we really just didn't see that to the department, to the director, because we were tracking. Maybe perhaps that's why it's costing you still struggling to make some notes on this. But we understand that I hope that next time when you come and present the report, we'll have sufficient time to do this. And so mine is on the initiation field. So, this thing you know, there is no drastic. I'm just questioning the timeline. I hear that you are saying the good news that the 10% reduction of the
But now I'm also worried about Israel. The ministry, we don't know the timeline, whether they need to be tabled at the cabinet and Chinese parliament. Long term, they need to have timeline. The department has to commit themselves that they really want to address this issue of the timeline. And now we see that the possibility that the as much as it's progressing in the Chinese department, when there is now the current issue that was done, is that the phase three of the transplant of the pain. But you see that others are still not making it now, also different for them. Because of already they are aware that how many of the young people are appealing for the transplant. You find that others are disadvantaged, they will not have a good opportunity to be able to transplant. Because of we don't know how many of them have been because some of them are silent and affecting them. They are confident and they are equal. So those are the issues that this bill needs to be addressed immediately so that we're able for the children, not only for the country, but we can act of the good role that we are doing the thing that we are functioning. What we have to do is that to manage on chapter number 19, so even though the president is going, I'm concerned, I noted that the budget of national houses is declining from 2015 going down to 2017. I'd like to know then how are they going to address the slide number, the one that would say they want to increase the number of functional structures of cancer and services by 2020. Because currently we only have 165 cancer agencies are functional. Well, this is the budget that is then, because as soon as you are going to see the success, the budget is going to be increased. But these are for the extent. I just want to also start with the question, how it goes to be increased. And look at the things that are going to be increased. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Earlier, I thought we would also get briefings from the Matter about the plan of the department in supporting and making sure that they amalgamate traditional leaders into the municipality. Because as long as they don't talk that one, all the rural municipalities, we will talk like we are dreaming. We will never be allowed to think of that. Because the current relations of the municipalities and the traditional affairs, it is not hesitating, it's not heritage, it's not something that one may not, you know, consider it and then talk to it. I'm sure even when we were, you know, discussing and then in the presidential endeavor chair about the better basis, you know, it's deliberately that program excluded traditional leadership. And they don't feel being part of that. And I'm sure I raised it, even in that particular time to say, why are you having 278 municipalities, having the mayor, the chief whip, the speaker, and the additional executive member? But you don't have, you know, let alone the House of Personal Leaders, which is 21, you know, 24 members. Why have you not brought them on board? You wanted them to come and, you know, support something that is, they were not participating. Unfortunately, as we speak in the Philippines, sometimes people, they thought when you are telling them the truth, they must avoid you. You cannot avoid the problem. You say the problem and find the solution. The fact is that the two systems are not born from one mother, from one womb. We must accept and we must demonstrate and say, how do we harmonize this? But we are trying to run away from one another. We have been saying, when are you going to call, you know, a summit where all of these people will talk about the relationship? I thought this program here, for that basis, it should also talk to that, because as long as you don't talk, it's going to impact on the land use. The land use is a serious question at the rural area. When you are saying land use, whose land are you referring to? Because municipality at that level is not at a land, and you don't want to talk to the land owner. You don't want them to understand what you are doing. How do you then expect, you know, yourself to do well when you don't want the land owner? But you talk about the land. Hence you will see, you will hear every day people say,
the municipality of Dimas hated this and people decided to do the opposite of what you are doing. It's because we are perpetuating the two, you know, parallel structures. To the law. We need to find the structure of the perpetual, you know, two systems moving parallel to one another and find each other and make sure that all of them, they work for the best interest of the South African. But as long as government, through this department, is the one that is leading, avoiding that, chairperson, we are wasting time. I'm from a rural area. I can't even tell you when do I frequently see what you call money. You said it's a closer local government. My headquarters is almost 70 kilometers away from us. I don't see them, I don't feel them, but you expect me to say things are normal. They are not. They are not. All your problems should talk to the reality on the ground. The language is a typical example, Chair. When Professor Maila presented here, he kept on emphasizing the new department that is heading. But the new department is what's supposed to tell us about the organogram of this whole. Is it well set up? Does it have all the sufficient, you know, personnel that they will execute the challenge that, you know, they're sitting with it? I'm sure the reason why you might have spotted a reduction of a budget, it goes with when you don't have, you know, proper people to plan properly and then, you know, negotiated for budget for the institutions where well. I guess we should be, you know, informed of that. I calculated the delegation here, sir. There are about 13. And of the 13, I'm sure only 3 said we are coming from traditional affairs. The bulk of the representation are coming from, you know, the Amazon there. For some reason, I may not even want to question. Why are they not, you know? It tells you that he might be afraid even to tell us that he has got less than the Director General. But you might find that he's sitting not over, you know, presiding or, you know, directing a department that does not even have the supporting staff. Whether it's that, how many directors that he has, you know, that they support himself, how many deputy directors, you know, that, all those systems, do we have them, Matanza? Or is this only Manila and
what is he, Matanza, if you
come at this?
I was just saying, reminding one of our members, I have a new address.
I'm not very sure you've got a strategy to make people to lose focus.
No, no, I apologize, but I'm saying when you address
when I said to that Matanzela, that Matanzela is a nurse. And
no,
I said
that Matanzela, not in that Matanzela.
Okay, in that Matanzela,
please.
Okay, so the DJ thing is something in that Matanzela. I respect you for that man. And then I'm sure people power in Pena for the woo as
well. No, it's fine. Yeah,
cool, thank you very much.
Well, why don't you use the chairperson or I will remember also, ne?
You
don't
like
that.
Excuse me?
No, you don't
like
that.
No, you must not see. Our number now, Dr. Papa, you know. I just saw her now, let's answer, maybe because I know you are from, you know, this area, Yahumapala,
you're
defending them. But I will only proceed when you give me a statement.
No, you are. Thank you very much. You have your
message. Chapter, on slide number, page 3, the mission statement, Chair. The last bulletin on the upper slide, which say monetary, providing support and what have you.
I don't see support provided to the institution of personnel.
Because this is the kind of support that we're not even going to be limited to the directorate of or the Department of Additional Affairs alone. It should be a support that emanated from all departments. The reason why I'm saying it is for us to change the democratic and the situation in South Africa, we need to become biased towards rural development. But it's all simple. Because if you don't capacitate and support institutions that is key to the rural development, therefore, the rural development you are talking about will never be, you know, realized. We are going to perpetuate continuation of, you know, mass moving of people from rural areas to the Mikuku. And then Mikuku becomes a problem because Mr. Matondela will again understand. But the reason why we are seeing the mushrooming of Mikus is because life is only in that particular spotlight. We are doing absolutely nothing to make sure that the bridge, the value that we are bringing into South Africa to develop South Africa, very little is, you know, looking at the rural area. We are continuing focusing at the urban areas, and we will see this, you know, kind of development of where people move from rural areas and continue to go into the urban areas. And the urban areas program that we need is to talk about how do we finally find the closure of this Mikuku. We can't. As a country, continue to, you know, see like Mikuku is a normal way of life. We are insulting our old people. They cannot, you know, permanently stay in those kind of shelters. You can see that their lives are in danger. Every time we are seeing fire, you know, moving up, we don't care because we don't stay there. People that are burned down there because there's no electricity, there's no formal structure, are our people, particularly from rural areas. We are feeling the pain of those people. So we need to change the way we are doing things and do things in a better way.
Maybe just to satisfy you, sir, I must close my submissions before you can even help me. The intact rate and alliance training of the department as I said in slide number 13, Chair. I'm not sure how are we going to see this happen, because the fact that where we are for now,
we are saying we are planning, we are aligning, but we don't talk to the landowners.
You hear what I say? The landowners. Because those people, you know, the land that we are talking about, they fought for. And if you want to make an attempt to, you know, take that land from them, they will continue that, you know, battle and fight for and then kill whoever wanted to. And I'm sure I will support them as an NGO. We said kill them because they...
Can you ensure that you stay on a situation where maybe CMSC has instigated? You are not going to allow upon interest in the chief whoever.
Is there anyone who wanted to kill anyone?
Listen to yourself.
I'm saying, is there anyone who wanted to kill anyone?
No.
I'm warning in advance to say, if you don't, you are going to find yourself in a
position. Yeah, but you are saying...
Can allow me to kill? Can I allow me to check?
Or give you a chance? Can I conclude what I want? I'm saying, you are saying the NDP will support any move to keep. And I'm saying, can you refrain from such pattern? That's the only thing that I'm saying.
Have you finished?
Yes.
Chairperson, I don't think you are NDP as much as I'm not NDP. I've got a view, And you allow me to teach you. Don't try to put words in my mouth. I'm speaking my mind, you are speaking your mind. Can you allow me to teach
you? You may speak, but thanks, I'm saying that we're refrain from raising anything that would be ulterior in terms of interpretation.
What do you want me to do?
Proceed.
I can't proceed until I tell you that my view is not right. Allow me to speak my view.
Sir, you may speak your view.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can I then afford Honorable Nwaila, maybe while you are still here, to give responses to questions that we have posed? Then we complete the second session of the questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Let me start with a question about the initiation bill, that the timelines and where the status. At the moment, it's still a policy. And we will end up as a deal which is within the parliamentary process. We submitted it to cabinet in 2013, and cabinet made a comment. It was initially called the initiation policy. Cabinet said we've got to broaden it because we have females level through that. And we then went to go and consult broadly, including the COI and SAR as well. And we finalized the process, which went back through the parliamentary process. And I also wanted to indicate that we also have other pieces of legislation, such as the National Health Act, which also deals with initiation, but it has got gaps. And this bill is intended to close those gaps. We also have the Social Development Act, which also talks about the age of children going to, that must be allowed to go to initiate school, and also the right of all initiate that they must not be forced, and those kinds of things and so on. So in terms of the timeline, it will be determined by environmental processes. We have finalized the consultations as directed by Cabinet. The budget designing of the National House within the medium term period, it is because there is top sliding of, I think from our department is 3.5 million over a medium term period. If this is done to all the departments. No, this is by treasury to ensure that infrastructure development and various other things are treated. And that is why you would find that, you know, it goes down and in the following financial year, then it goes up again. It will be difficult, it will be very tight, but, you know, we will just try and make sure that we operate within that budget. The Honorable Kabejan, the issue of harmonization, it is true that at the lower levels, there are quite often tensions that are there. However, through Back to Basics, we are collaborating with DCOC to ensure that we harmonize our work and also to ensure that, you know, harmonization does not, is not only limited to relationship between the elected leaders and the traditional leaders. It goes beyond that. Harmonization in terms of provision of services as well. There is work that we have started doing. I think in future when we have the opportunity, we'll be able to also show it, because we have floated it, what we have done, for example, we have done mapping of all traditional standards in South Africa. And also, we have also looked at the services provided in those rural areas. And, you know, basic services such as electricity, water, sanitation, refuge, and so on. We're looking at the access to that. We're still working, compiling that information, and that will also assist us so that when the collaboration at local government level is, you know, it's improved through the regulations that we've just finalized, where we are, you know, indicating how that, you know, the participation of traditional leaders at that level should be conducted. And the other thing as well that we're going to propose is that it is not only, it should not be one-sided where traditional leaders go and serve in local municipality councils. The executives from municipalities, every beginning of the financial year, have to also go to traditional councils to go and outline their progress and they know how these programs will be impacting on those communities. There are provinces that are doing it already. Eastern Cape has been doing it for quite some time. The premier and the executive go to the house, provincial house there, to go and present all their programs and so on. We think if this can happen, you know, it will also go a long way to try and assist in terms of harmonizing these things and all. So one of the things with, as far as traditional leaders are concerned, there is the concept of Ubuntu, lots of where people care for each other and so on. Now, traditional leaders being the custodians of African heritage and culture, you know, they have to take that lead to actually ensure that our children, the new younger generation, understand that, you know, our heritage is rich in terms of finding ways of dealing with conflict and those kind of things. As we speak, almost 80% of the royal families have got disputes and conflicts and those kind of things. So we're saying that, you know, if playing back basics could also involve the royal families, traditionally that's also assisting in that type of work. The issues of the structure of the Department of Traditional Affairs, we did not present the structure of traditional affairs. We're not finalized our structure. And as we stand now, the structure that we are utilizing, we have two DDGs and about five chief directors, including the CFO. Now, one of the DDG position has been vacant for quite some time. We advertised about 9 positions for corporate services for the first time. And we are currently also exploring sharing in some areas, for example, in HR, in corporate services broadly. There are areas that we think that we can get. By finalizing a concept document that has been finalized, we have asked Treasury also assist us in that regard. But at the moment, while we are finalizing that process, Treasury did not approve the adjustment of the budget, and you know, we are really, really struggling in terms of our budget with regard to ensuring that we cover all the areas within our money. The issues of, well, Honorable Fabrizani also talked about informal settlements. If we look at the current trend, we have people occupying informal, you know, occupying land that is not, you know, that is just lying fallow, not being utilized. They are doing it also in rural areas. In one rural community, I remember what traditional leaders saying, they were going to march to the social government offices because there are people who have just started to say informal settlement and they're choosing traditional leaders within that informal settlement setup, which is very obviously lawlessness. So the NDP is posing the question of 2030 to say by 2030, 70% of South Africa will be urban. And so we need to, especially, particularly traditional leaders, to grapple with this question to say what are the implications for that. And as far as the issue of land use, at the moment there are different challenges of land use management. And in rural areas, you know, the communities there don't have title deeds. And you have double stories of people that are earning and they are not contributing in terms of the pool of rain. Now the challenge as far as traditional leaders are concerned is that if they get title deeds, then you know traditional leaders feel very, very strongly that it is going to affect you know the community in such. Because then people no longer be saying that I need some leadership. And the way we define a community in terms of traditional Framework Act, where we say a community are people that speak the same language, they have the same culture in a particular locality or jurisdictional area. You know, so it is an issue that we need further deliberation on. We have some well-to-do traditional leaders that have developed their areas, they have built malls and stadia in their own land, and after they've done that, you know, one traditional leader in Northwest, when he wanted to build the stadium, you know, he was collaborating with the municipality, was saying, in terms of their special plan, the special plan is not going this way. It is going on the other direction, so they're not going to support the traditional leader. The traditional leader went ahead and built the stadium, built a mall and some boulevard and all, employed many. And now the challenge was the water, and the basic services generally and so on. And he also went ahead and put in those policies himself and so on. So these are some test cases where we need to deal with, because these are the areas that the municipalities are not collecting any rates and taxes as well. As far as I think I've tried to cover as much as questions that have been posed.
I think it's very clear we are not doing enough, particularly on the side of the traditional stations. And maybe as a community, we have engaged with the will of the community to say we must have either if or not. We did engage the minister now recently, that was a week is not true. Where we strongly felt as a small community that there's a need for us to come up, particularly on issues that affect the traditional stations. Because if you say there's also issues of IDT that are more biased for urban than rural, you know, and there's more oversight that is done. Apart from that, also on issues of initiation in schools, these are some of the concurrent responsibilities. on whether we have a barometer to say issues of accountability. How do you expect report? I think there's much to be discussed. And maybe that is why maybe the feeling that you see in the house is as if we are overlooking the this leg, which is also part of the ministry. And I think maybe we should honorable demand see if we can do something on our demand, particularly on the side, because we don't need to really to address issues of traditional leadership as if it's fighting. I think we constitute part of our Africa, and they are also within the spheres of government. Maybe that is what we must really do. Because if you need to check the report that we got on our mind, as and when you report, it's then that you are hitting up that you are also facing challenges. Like you highlighted the issue of the tax base, issue of the land use, which are some of the issues that need raised and attention on the side of us as the community. And I think maybe on that note, we have to say clearly that the need that we had a follow-up session on our TV, where we engage directly the deputy minister or the minister around issues of additional education. Can I then check if there is any follow-up questions? Honorable Kanga, then Honorable Zimani, give a
lot. Yeah, my mind was just planned or I wanted to know eventually around the issue of your traditional coffee. How far are we with that event? Also, I'm going to go.
Two things. And that is, just for a record, there is no, in the parliamentary process, there's nothing on the initiation bill. So that a wrong record must not be taken through. Things of 2013 I last, but Parliament doesn't deal with policy, deals with bills as such. So there's no bill on the list of on the things of Parliament. So I guess the DG would know that that should still be up, and there are two deadlines to have a bill within this financial year. Those deadlines are out there. And, the other should have been, I know the Cabinet has signed up, the Minister will introduce a bill, or the bill has been conveyed to Parliament. As far as I'm concerned, it's somewhere between Pretoria and Cape Town. But the second one is the issue, two matters really. One is the issue on what is there in this APP stress plan to be done between the two departments, the Women's Department of Women in relation to Uthwala as such, because it's an issue of the traditional affairs. I haven't had the comment on any of the matters, so let's see what they do there. The last one relates to this organogram matter. It's a matter that has been raised. The department is not the 20th, it's not the 5th parliament department, I think. It was established in the previous term, and this matter of the organogram is not been finalized. Has taken too long. Now, I think we need to get these strict terms for many years to come. What is it that is being done by when to finalize the organogram? And what is the whole? Thank you, Honorable Zimani. But we still believe that we will still pursue a follow-up on our demand. As I agree to the minister. Honorable Laila.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Because traditional part here, however, it is, even though it is the department responsible for it, it's just Department of Justice, I wouldn't know the latest. What I know is that it will come back to Parliament for finalization. And the issue of the quality and bill, thanks for clarifying that, Honorable Demander. I agree that, it's a bill that serves before Parliament. Policy serves at a executive level. And the issue of Umthwala, it's a very contentious issue. It's a cultural issue. We were cited as a witness in one court case in the High Court here in Cape Town as a partner. because somebody raised a 14-year-old child and said I did it because of car crisis. The chairperson of the National House had to send an indicator that that is not culture abuse. So, Kukutwala basically, you know, the way it was done, if two people agree, they are lovers and they make arrangements and some people come and chase to the lady and so on. Now, abduction, it's not the same thing as Kukutwala. And we have been involved in the, there is a policy document that has been developed. We are working with the CRL Rights Commission. So we do have a document, we can make it available, because what is remaining now is, you know, for the CRL Rights Commission to ensure that those children are protected, they are not abducted, because anything, any child that is very young, cognitively, they still have to go to school and learn and those kinds of things, they are not at the age where there would be consensus in terms of that level and so on. We have been centrally involved in that. It's not only Kuala, there are various other things. I think Deputy Minister Apela has articulated this. I think, you know, it was not with the select committee. He indicated that there are a whole range of areas that we are looking at, Kuala, Ungenwa, and Uzida, and various things like that. And some of the things, because we also have what we call harmful cultural practices that we have to go away with, and there are those cultural practices that are still relevant that we need to embrace and promote going forward. The issue of the structure in terms of how far we are with it, as you will recall that, you know, in terms of back to basics, you know, back to basics is an approach that has been adopted, launched by the president. And we are trying to also align our work along the side, Honorable Khosi Khoisalme indicated that there's what we've had harmonization. So now that we have back to basic thrust, those thrust must inform our structure. We have to look at our structure, we have to reposition the department to be able to achieve, to achieve those thrust. Because obviously the structure, I mean the structure must follow the priorities and tracks. And we will be finalizing the structure and in future we'll be able to also present it like people presented their structure. That's it.
Thank you very much. May I then take this opportunity to support Honorable DG Bose? Just to complete the outstanding question, I think it will help before only 10 minutes. Then we conclude the news of the day. But like I've indicated on our Laila, that means that in the neighborhood will do the select committee will identify all areas of deficiencies that we have picked up, and then we invite you to appear before us with a furnished you, however, with that information that you can enhance your response for such deficiencies or challenges.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
Chairperson. If you will allow me, I will pass some of the questions to my colleagues. I have two questions, in respect of which I will solicit the assistance of Ms. Majid. The one is on the corruption question, which you pose, what are the measures? There's another one, but perhaps in this instance I must try and deal with it myself. What is the plan to deal with councillors who are being trained, but there is no change? It's an unfair question for that. I think it's fundamentally a political question. Why is it that political parties are giving the people of our country councillors and are not capable of absorbing any change? So it's a political question, which I'm going to go back. But Madam Mujadawas will assist me on that other matter. Chairperson, the one relating to the target, most of these targets are clearly set out in our operational plan, which we will be happy to share with the committee in due course, because they will actually outline the activity so that the committee can have a sense of exactly what the people will be doing on the regular basis towards the achievement of the CEPSA. On the IMSI bill, the bill has been approved certified by the State Board of Advisors the 34 countries. But you may be aware that there was a time when there were two bills before the executive, the one called the IMSI bill and the other one called the Public Administration Management Bill, which is now an act. Both these bills were certified by the Office of the State Law Advice, and both of them were at some point seeking to provide for Section 100. But it looks like the PEM bill has now left the Section 100 issue passed, that it will now be dealt with in this way. So we are now required to go back to Cabinet for further endorsement of the bill before we can introduce it to Parliament. It is certainly part of our legislative program. The most profound question you've asked me, Chairperson, relates to the Section 40, which would be the Section 139 question in relation to the old law and the bill. Chairperson, Section 40 talks about, especially for Section 1, talks about the interrelatedness of the different and the interdependence of the field. As to what municipalities must do that keeps them distinct, relates to what is the access of money, and that relates to specific schedules. In a sense, a municipality becomes distinct because there are things that are exclusive as their mandate. But even those things that are in the relevant schedule of the Constitution, that relates to municipalities exclusively from provinces. The Constitution says, in one of the sections, if I recall, I think it is Section 155, it provides for legislative and executive authority of national government and provincial government to ensure effective performance by municipalities in respect of matters listed in the schedule. What that means then is that distinct as the municipalities may be in respect of those actions, both provincial and national governments have the responsibility through legislative and other measures to make sure that municipalities do what they must do and do it well. So there is no language implied or otherwise in the Constitution that any sphere of government is independent of the Constitution. I know it's a contentious issue, and this matter has sometimes been misunderstood by our court. Because what tends to happen is if you have a bad case in the sense of being bad fact, you can easily make bad law through your court. And I think many of the cases that people rush to court with tend to be cases that do not help but make good law, because the facts are sometimes not very helpful, but the principles are important. And somehow the court sometimes gets hazed in that situation. But may I, Chairperson, if you will allow me, ask Madame Majus to step in on that one question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, your question was mainly focusing on, you know, the role, the negative role that the media seems to be painting and painting everyone with the same brush. Our culture as a department, in terms of our plan to combat corruption, is so there is certainly a large problem with corruption in the local government space, and we're not denying that. The way that we are responding to that is to step up our efforts on consequence management. So where there are those that are found guilty, let's take swift action, make an example out of them, send a clear message into the system that here is a guilty party, this is the amount of money that's been recovered, and thereby provide a new level of confidence that the state is acting, the state is serious, and citizens can see that we've reported this, and there's now an end results that we can see. It's publicized, it's communicated accordingly. We are collaborating with all the different partners to get more action around that. So the DG did mention earlier that we've analyzed just under 100 forensic reports, and we are taking action with what we're finding in those forensic reports. Where recommendations have not been implemented, we take mayors, councillors, municipalities, provinces to task, say, why have you neglected and failed on this? This is the list of disciplinary actions that should have been taken. What's the status on it? We are working very closely with all the law enforcement agencies, and each one of these forensic reports has been assessed for assets for forfeiture potential, so that is also being taken through the system. So there's a lot of action that you can expect to see to come up. You must also appreciate, Chairperson, that often some of the interventions from the law enforcement is not always high profile. We don't get to see how many people appear in court on a daily basis on a number of these cases. Also, some of these cases need to be managed very delicately so that it's not compromised and that documents and evidence don't get destroyed. Because it's sometimes a very complex environment to work in to bring guilty parties to book. So there's a lot of actions that in just the last week, we spent 3 days with the law enforcement agency holding a national conference convened by the NPA on serious forms of corruption. And there was also a new commitment to saying we want to get a dedicated team of prosecutors that will only look at local government corruption cases so that we can move that through the system faster, because we are frustrated with the slow pace of these cases sometimes needing to be concluded, and then people report possibly an anonymous support in year one, and only in year five we might see something if the case, you know, managed to deliver results. We also reviewed our strategy for anti-corruption in local government. We will be engaging with SALGA's members assembly coming up in the 3 days later this month to also get endorsement there, and we're working very closely with that partner others that have made the strategy really become a strategy with teeth, with dynamism, that we can really have the impact that we desire and bring all the role players in the next chair. I'll pause there, Chair, hope that's satisfied you.
Okay. But you also asked a question about the organizational structure that's actually being replaced by the one that they have proposed. May I propose that we send you discussion in writing, so that we don't just tell you the post, but we even describe what area of focus, so that you see how that has been translated into the new. Thank you. That will go to the right.
So, honourable members, I'm not sure there's anything that you might have left behind. Honourable Zimani?
Just to comment that with my others, I still want to, I wasn't fully satisfied. I had the one on community works, right? But I wanted to know what will happen, what will be done. And then the one on special programs, what role are they playing? It wasn't like that. It's part of that equity one. The programs that all municipalities run on special programs where the side of the surface is diminished. I doubt if they have in any percentage in terms of disabled people themselves. Yes, that was not answered. But the tribunal as well, Chair, I'm not satisfied with it, because the issue that I was getting at is the relations with between it and the bureau that is established by the PEM. Remember, all the intentions of the PEM Act has this central to it. So one needed to see, because this could be a strategic policy shift or imperative, I don't know, from whatever angle you want to come from. But that was not touched on, that element that I want, even the composition of it, because the answer check that I was given is that it is just a labor relation. It's focusing on labor relations. So it is just the composition, which means each municipality will have it. It will be departmental something. Municipality will subscribe to. So it's a whole host of policy imperatives and policy elements that I needed to come out in terms of that answer.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm not sure on the head of the department if you will be able to attempt to respond to this question. I noted GDG over there. I'll come to GDG.
The part that we can respond to about federal programs and municipalities, about 8 years ago, the former department, DPLG as it was then known, did a framework for disability and in local government. We have just, the last 6 months, initiated a process to review that policy framework regarding giving guidance to disability and special programs in municipality. That's a project that's being completed in the next month. We've also taken the initiative to say we've got a disability framework around what we want municipalities to do in implementing policies and legislation of our country. We've got the gender programs, we've got youth, we've got elderly persons, and we've put all of these frameworks next to each other and saying each one of these frameworks were developed, if you like, independently of each other. And it's all coming at a municipality. And the assumptions of these frameworks are making that national is giving sufficient guidance to municipalities on how to successfully implement and execute all of these different policy frameworks. Our analysis and the review that we've done over the years shows that municipalities are struggling. They're not getting sufficient guidance from national, from all the different lead departments that might be the custodians of these different pieces of frameworks. Some municipalities are doing their best and they are being as innovative as they can, and others have no clue on how to come at it, despite some interest and goodwill that they might have. So the initiative that we've got now is to say we want to look at all of these frameworks and get an integrated framework together for all special programs. So we're speaking with different offices of the premiers where most of these programs are located at a provincial level to look at how do we get some greater effectiveness going across a range of different special programs, and we've got different provinces participating in this pilot initiative. So I'm confident, Chairperson, that we will be moving in the right direction around getting a refocus on special programming for municipalities and being much more specific and nuanced with what can the big metros do and do well already, and what is it that smaller municipalities can and should be expected to do in terms of special program, and not expect the metro and the small municipality that might be dysfunctional to be performing on the same level across everything that might be living in each one of these frameworks. Thanks.
Thank you, Gigi.
Chairperson, I think on the issue of the tribunal, it might be necessary for us to agree that we will come back. Because we're not talking about a tribunal that already exists. We're talking about something that we are putting the building blocks on. And if the committee would wish to interact with us on our conceptualization of it and the whole detail around it, which detail will also include how distinct it will be, or how will it distinguish itself from these other bodies that may exist, that we will be happy to come with and have a focus discussion of, and perhaps most of honourable members demand this question, including those who might not have asked yet, maybe answer as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members. Any further clarity to the question from both presentations? If none, then I then ask any announcement on honourable demand.
That is the Registry Department, so just to ask to remind members that the Petitions Committee will sit in the morning of our 30 terms of the program. I've just spoken to the Chair that we have requested through the Joint Inquiry this morning that it resume again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that Chairs and their staff, the Joint Management Committee, be held at 2 o'clock tomorrow because of that.
Thank you very much. Allow me then to officially declare this meeting closed, but even know that we really appreciate the effort from the department to ensure that you honor and invite to come and do presentation. We hope you have a really healthy and thought-provoking type of an interaction, which will, the more we interact, the more and the better understanding we find each other in the long run. For those that want my top on their toes, bear with me that I'm driving the line of duty. Like a sweet one, but we hope what the results here will be taken further in terms of pursuing further engagement even in the future. Like we're grateful to them that honestly speaking, the traditional affairs, that means that we pursue further engagement. If you don't know, I officially declare the committee closed. Thank you very much.